You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride Across Podcast.
Wait, so tell me, give me context. I'm like a context guy.
Okay.
Context about the podcast. Okay. How long have you been doing it?
Yeah, why'd so we've been doing this podcast for... since pretty much the beginning, or at least 3 years, but we haven't taken it very seriously. So it's been like, oh, we want our friends to come on and we'll interview them, or someone has an album coming out and we interview them about that.
Yeah.
But about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was like, I want to take this really seriously.
Yeah.
I want to branch out more from just interviewing artists.
Yeah.
And kind of people in the community or people that are doing things that, you know, similar to what we do, but in different subgenres.
Yeah.
So we're kind of rebranding it and relaunching it a little bit.
Are you still going to call it the same?
Yeah, it's going to be called Ride or Cry Podcast.
Okay.
And it's kind of just very casual chatting about, you know, how someone built whatever they built. And
yeah. How many of them are you doing a week? Are you recording?
We're going to put out 2 a month. Every other Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So right now we're in the process of, do you know Ashley Osborne, the photographer?
No.
Well, she's old. Also on today. Okay. But yeah, I'm just going to do a bunch and then start putting them out, you know.
That's cool.
But I think we can put this one out the Friday before the food festival.
Oh, perfect.
So kind of like tie it in that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah. A lot. There's a lot.
Why did you decide that it would be important to start working on the podcast more seriously?
Well, so I'm just going to also introduce you right away before we get into it. But so this is Bobby. He's one of the founders of The Hundreds.
It is I.
And so I went to school for journalism. So I love doing stuff like this to begin with. And then also because... lately, I've just been going through a thing of like, I don't know, I'm sure you've gone through thinking like, what am I doing all this for? Like, what part of what I'm doing sparks joy and what actually I have to do just because it has to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And this podcast, I actually really enjoy doing. So I'm trying to just do more things in life in general that spark joy.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
It doesn't feel like work.
It does not feel like work. Yeah.
Is there any, do you guys have, are you putting... revenue against it? Is it something that you're investing in? Are you going to make money from doing? Or right now there's no...
No, there's no plan.
There's no plan
for it.
Yeah. Same. We just launched my podcast, which is not really... I mean, I even called it, this is not a podcast.
But you call everything, this is not
this a... This is not a... Yeah. It's like, so... It's such a non-committal way to move up the world. It's just like, I'm not really into this. And then if it works, it's just like, oh, I was totally serious about it the entire time.
It is a podcast.
Yeah, it is. It was always a podcast. But if it doesn't work, I'm like, I told you, it wasn't a podcast.
That's really funny.
Yeah. It's like such like a weak way of doing things. But no, we're doing just this 10-episode capsule centered around my book. But it was kind of the same thing. Like, I love... In the same way, I'm a journalist, and I like hearing other people's stories more than my own, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so curious about... I'm like, oh, sorry. I just... when I hit my headphone, it pulled, like, everything else in the room together. Like, all the walls started closing in.
Yeah, everything just crashes down on the
everything
floor.
Starts imploding. like a circus tent. Oh, my God. I'm really clumsy, too. But, I don't know. We're doing it the same way. And I feel like that side of our brand experience has always been that. We have an entire media platform, editorial team dedicated towards this platform. We have this podcast that we've been working on, but there's never really been the forethought of money.
Yeah.
Also because I come from a school of thought of money and journalism, it just doesn't, you don't want to confuse those two.
Yeah.
It starts getting kind of weird. And then you really are just working and not being curious or doing things because you have to. And it's almost like antithetical to what that process is for me.
Yeah.
Right. So the same with I know how you're doing. I agree with what you're doing. I think it's good to do that.
Yeah.
It's good that you're doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing is, what is that piano?
Ooh.
What a nice background.
I thought you started doing that. Like it was just a...
Is it Dave?
Is it a piano or is it like an alarm?
I don't know. It's gone now. Okay, it's gone. but I think another reason that I wanted to do this podcast, you know, more frequently and consistently is because, and this is something I wanted to talk to you about too, is what we do is for the community, right? Like everything we do, the community of emo night and emo music and just this culture in general is what we do it for. And I feel like there are a lot of people who either are doing similar things or that I just want to chat with in the community and kind of hear about, you know, how they got to where they're at or how they contribute to the larger picture.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of their inner monologue in their heads, you know,
because so beyond the emo world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with you, for instance, I'll preface this by saying I know so incredibly little about streetwear.
Good.
Like next to nothing.
Good for you.
And what's really funny is
you're probably a much happier and enlightened person than I am.
That's how I feel about the music industry. When someone's like, cool, it's so cool to work in it. I'm like, totally. But it's funny because obviously I've heard of the Hundreds forever. Mm. Like I knew that the Hundreds existed, but when I became aware of you was when Mark Hoppus would tweet at us because we were the only two people he knew who had Androids.
Do you remember? Yeah.
And like once a month he would be like, you guys wouldn't understand because you have an Android. And it was only just you and me every time. And I was like,
that was you.
Yes. And I was like, okay, there's one other person out there because I get shit about it every day. Like just put on blast on the internet or in real life, like all day, every day.
Babs, you still have an Android?
I do have an Android. Did you switch?
Before I answer that question.
Okay.
Why are you on an Android?
Okay, so I've always pretty much since I could choose a phone, so I was in high school and I had a flip phone or whatever, I just got a Samsung Galaxy.
Okay.
And so it's almost like that's what I became familiar with. And every time it comes out, I get the new one. And then when I have to use an iPhone, if someone's like, hey, can you like do this on my phone? I have no idea. It's a foreign world.
It's a different language.
So I don't want to shift to that because I know my phone so well. Yeah. And you know what also really pisses me off is everything they do. Like, so then I just got the new Samsung Galaxy.
And it's amazing.
Amazing. It has three cameras. And I was talking to my boyfriend about this yesterday. He was like, oh, the new iPhone's coming out. It's going to have three cameras. And I was like,
yeah, always.
Yeah, it's been around on my phone for months. Yeah. Like, and it happens every time.
Yeah, every time.
They just copy and paste.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this cool new iPhone. And everyone's like, guys.
Yeah.
So.
In the last year when everyone was like, my phone is waterproof. And I'm like, Samsung hasn't been waterproof for like 5 years.
Literally years. I've been dropping it in pools for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not on an Android anymore. So I started off, first of all, phones peaked with a BlackBerry. Correct? Incorrect?
I would say incorrect. And I would say they peaked at the, what were those? Like the flip phones or like the...
Oh, like a Nokia? Like,
like what were they called?
The brick phones?
No.
Or the razors?
You like...
Oh, the three ways.
Sidekicks. That's where it peaked for me.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I can agree to that.
Okay.
So, and then after that, everything just, we don't need anything that came after that. We didn't, there was nothing wrong with buttons to me. Right. And now, and then we started getting rid of all the buttons and that became a huge problem because I'm a very tactile person.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I feel like I can trace all the world's problems back to the point where we started removing buttons from things. Like we're starting to like lose actual connection with things. But once it started going into glass, I had an iPhone and what happened was I was on an iPhone and my friend was running all the marketing at Samsung. And he was like, there's a, were you ever on the White Glove program? Mm-mm. The White Glove concierge program?
No.
So when Samsung was trying to compete against iPhone in the early stages of the smartphones, they developed this program called White Glove. And there was only 100 people in it around the world. And it was influencers, you can imagine, celebrities, right? And then somehow I ended up in there and Ben, my partner. So what the White Glove program would do was they would flow you phones. So every 6 months, you would get whatever the new phone was. If it was the new Edge, for people who are iPhone literate, the Edge is like, you know,
the curved,
the curved one, or there's like a plus for, there's like bigger ones, small. So every 6 months, you would get whatever the new generation of the phone was. They would literally come to your office and reprogram your phones for you. And so that's why we ended up on a Joy program for a while, because it was so convenient. And they even, through this program, you could literally break your phone. Like, I could sit here and throw it on the floor. Mm-hmm. And within 20 minutes, a guy would show up at the door with a brand new phone and everything programmed in it. And he'd be like, here you go. I remember we were at South by Southwest 1 year. And if you lost your phone, they sent an email out. They said, if you're at South by Southwest and you lose your phone, you'll have a new one within like 5 to 10 minutes. And there was literally a guy, like we'd be at the Fader Fort and you could see this guy just running up and down the street, like to White Glove people, like handing them off phones and taking their old ones.
That is so funny.
So of course we're going to be into the, you know, I love Samsung, you know, every chance I got, I was just like praising Samsung. And so having said all that, Samsung does make a better phone.
Yeah.
The problem is that in our world, in our industry, most people are on iPhone. And so a lot of the messages would start getting lost and not translate, and, you know, file transfers and stuff like that. Like, you would kind of have to have these weird workarounds, and there's no iMessage, so you have to download Mighty Text. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you use, like, texting platforms from your laptop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so that's the only reason. I was starting to, so many of my messages were getting lost, and people weren't getting my texts. That after a while, I was just like, this is super annoying. And I'm going to go to an inferior phone. Oh, I have to also, this is the dumbest story. Please edit this entire thing out. This has nothing to do with anything we're talking about today. But at the same time, my friend was flying us to Samsung. Our other friend, so I have like, there's like a triangle of friends, me, these two other guys. And my other friend became the head of marketing for Apple. And he was just like, you can't be seen on a Samsung. So to compete against each other, he started putting me on the Apple program. So I literally had both phones at the same time for 2 years.
Damn.
And I could compare. And it really was Samsung in the end. So I feel like I'm one of the only people who can actually honestly say that a Droid is better.
Yeah.
But the problem is most people are on the backwards dumb phone.
Yeah.
So
you know what's
that's
also,
my life.
I mean, that's all very relatable. Yeah. But I also, so what happened to me one day, which I think solidified my passion for Samsung, is this was probably like very beginning, maybe year one of Emo Night and Ride or Cry. And I was walking to a coffee shop to get lunch on Sunset to Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on my phone, and that month, my sister and I decided to just say yes to everything. We were like, we're going to just say yes to whatever.
Ooh.
Unless it's dangerous or whatever. Yeah. So I was walking and I was on my phone, and there was this woman outside of Stories, and she had a sign up that said, do you have a Samsung? But I was looking down and she's like, oh, you have a Samsung? Huh. I was like, yeah. And she's like, I have to be really vague about this, but like, are you around this weekend? And then can you show up somewhere today at 4 in Hollywood? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
I have to say yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I showed up and it ended up being Jimmy Kimmel, and they were doing this huge promotion for Samsung. So I had to put on this like football gear, and somebody threw like cheese on top of me or on me from the roof. And if the cheese like hit me, it was like queso, because it was for a promotion for South by Southwest.
Oh, it's not like a slice of cheese, like the
it was like
the baby
queso
thing.
Like full on like liquid cheese.
Oh.
And so some of it was supposed to touch me for me to win this like thing.
Okay.
And like literally one drop fell on me, like on my finger.
Okay.
You know? And
so I won
like the brand new phone that came out that day with a VR headset and a trip to South by Southwest to see Lil Wayne and Sia through Samsung that weekend. Like I had to get on a plane the next morning.
Whoa, Samsung.
Yeah, but it was so cool, you know? Yeah. It was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
I wish we could dedicate an entire episode to you telling us what happened that entire month you said yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would have to really think about it because I don't really remember, but it...
Was it a good thing to do that?
It was a great thing.
Oh, it was?
But it was also exhausting because...
Oh, right. Yeah, you couldn't
say said
no.
Yes to every, like, going out opportunity and every...
Were people taking advantage of that? They're like, no, can you really... help me move this weekend?
I wasn't really vocal about the fact that I was doing it.
Right,
you know,
right.
It was just me saying yes
so cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, but it was really exhausting.
Yeah.
It was just like going out and about, living life, you know? And I was like, I need to
just
get some
constant
sleep.
Detours.
Yeah. Okay, so I read your book pretty much in 2 days after it came out. It was, I mean.
You read a lot, though.
I read a lot.
Which I appreciate.
I read just, it's pretty much all I do now.
Yeah.
It's, which is on one hand good, but on another hand, like, I can't relate to people who watch shows and movies because I haven't seen anything lately. But we were flying. Beth was on my flight too. We were both reading it. So I read it really quickly, and I think it's an easy read. But I think there were so many parts of it that I related to, like, on a deep level, that even though, you know, we work in totally different industries, I think a lot of the things that we've done or a lot of our belief systems are really, really similar.
Sure, yeah.
And I think, you know, the number one thing about that is community.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about how that is, you know, a really important thing for you throughout whatever you decide to do in life?
Yeah. It's something that I don't even think I necessarily realized or appreciated up until recently. In fact, I believe it was during the process of the book that a lot of that messaging started to crystallize, and me understanding what really that philosophy and that ideology was about that had driven me to create this brand for so long, right? Because part of the process of writing a memoir, and I believe everyone should write a memoir, you know, even if you never publish it, just write it, because it takes you through this exercise of really removing yourself from your storyline and seeing everything objectively, why things happened the way they were, why they did, what drew you to certain movements or causes, or what and eventually built your character, right? And for me, what I realized in the course of this book, you know, my publisher said, write your memoir. And I was like, okay, how do I do that? So I started when I was born, and I was like, oh, I was this kind of a kid. And what I realized, I was just like, God, I always felt like I just didn't belong. Like, I was always marginalized and outcast. I was an outlier. I was, you know, I'm an Asian American kid in a predominantly white and brown community. Okay, so there's one. Oh my God, I was attracted to skateboarding and like hardcore music and emo and like weird music, and I dressed funny, and none of the girls liked me, and the cool kids didn't want anything to do with me. So I was constantly trying to fit, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's almost everyone. And so we're moving through life, navigating, trying to find where we belong. And, you know, I tried on skateboarding and I tried on hardcore, and then I found streetwear, and streetwear was pretty close to what I felt like was a fit. And then when I started building my own brand and my own community, then I really felt like I found a home, and I was able to provide that home. Like, the first, our brand has been around for 16 years now. And that entire time was me going out and proselytizing this message of brand building, right? And I was just constantly talking about, like, how do you build a brand? And this is how I'm building a brand. And I was very transparent about the process. And then it got to a point where I was like, what do I do once I have this brand, right? And now I realize that for so long I was creating a home for myself, and now this brand exists so that I can create a home for other people to come together and connect, right? And you're right, there's so many parallels, and I think that's why I was immediately enamored with Emo Night once I started to dig into what you guys were doing. You know, I'd go out there and I'd be like, oh my God, they have the same exact thing. It's in a different realm. For these people, they fit here and they find a home and a special existence here. And it's so important for us to have these communities out there, whether they're centered around brands or not. I just think brands are very convenient to build communities around, because you can make a living doing it, so you can sustain yourself. You know, and we just live in a capitalistic world. Like, it's okay to be an entrepreneur and want to create something that stands on its own legs, and you can build your own, center your own career around. So if you're doing that, once you also make it be a home for other people to find comfort and solace.
Yeah, because the coolest thing I find about Emo Night is just seeing the relationships that form between people who go, you know? Right. So, for instance, my sister is getting married next weekend to someone she met at Emo Night.
Whoa.
Right? So that to me is my greatest, like...
Yeah, it's one of your greatest accomplishments.
100%.
Yeah.
I would say the greatest because it brought the most important person in my life happiness forever.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of groups of friends show up hours early and just wait in line, not to wait in line, but to see each other. And it's their one time in the month where they can just be there and chat and catch up. And it's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that really, because sometimes I kind of lose track of why this is important to me when I get really exhausted and overworked and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then I always come back to that it's really provided a place for people to meet and form relationships and friendships. And
our staff took a couple trips to Emo Night this year, and we have a bunch of new kids on board for whatever reason in the last 12 months. And so a lot of them are kind of finding their bearings and seeing who their friends were going to be. And we all went out to Emo Night, and still maybe one of the highlights of the year in terms of just overall. It had nothing to do with our work. Like, we weren't even there for our jobs. There's nothing connected to any of our product, you know. It was just to enjoy this thing together. And I just can't think of many other places that we could have gone to have done that in LA that was non-threatening, that was there wasn't necessarily like stigma attached to it, that you didn't have, there was like no learning curve, like, oh, you need to be, you have to, you know, streetwear can be like that, right? Streetwear is just like, oh, you don't know, like, you don't know about this brand, oh, you're not cool enough. It's there's none of that with Emo Night. Like, everyone is allowed to come. If you don't care for the music, you can still have so much fun.
Yeah,
you know. And we bonded so incredibly well at that event that every time I feel like there's any type of stress within the organization or we're kind of at our limits, I'm like, oh, we gotta go do an Emo Night.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like a religious, it's like a spiritual retreat. Like, we gotta go do this together.
Totally. You
know? So we were actually just talking about it last week. We were like, I think it's time. And everyone's just like, yeah, let's go. You know,
yeah.
So I know with you, you're, sorry to interrupt, but I know with you, when you're wondering, you know, why am I doing this? It's not even for you. It's for them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then that becomes a little bit, you know, conflicting in a way.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the greater good in it, for sure. And then another parallel that I found to be so interesting is your kind of like love-hate relationship with Atom Bomb.
Yeah.
Because we have the exact same thing with Sad as Fuck.
Oh, right.
That's
your hit.
Hate it.
Yeah.
You know, but then we'll do a collab with Pleasures, Chinatown Market, Vic Mensa. And then we'll put out a tie-dye Sad as Fuck tank top, and the sales like couldn't even compare.
Yeah. You know? Once you start layering the tie-dye on your greatest hit.
Oh my God.
Forget about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
We've never sold anything as much as this tie-dye tank this summer. I mean, it was just like flying off the shelves.
If this was 3 years ago, you could have put Sad as Fuck on a dad hat, and it would have, like, a dad hat and then a tie-dye dad hat with a Sad as Fuck would have just put everyone over the edge. Why do you hate it?
Because it's something Morgan designed as a joke at our second Emo Night. Somebody was like, do you guys make shirts?
Yeah.
And we're like, I guess we should. And Morgan was just in Photoshop and made this ridiculous, like, really simple thing. And TJ and I were like, cool, let's just print those. And then it just kind of was a joke, you know. And in the past few years, people have taken it so seriously, you know, that we're promoting sadness and that.
Oh, they've been critiquing it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And not that, you know, I've worked really hard to make sure that I don't care about what other people think. But it kind of, I don't know, there was just a lot of backlash.
First of all,
around
we all care what other people think of us, right?
Like, I don't really anymore, honestly.
Really?
I went to a lot of therapy for it.
Okay.
And it takes a lot for me to truly like read a comment online and be affected by it.
Right.
Like a lot. Like it would have to be real bad.
Yeah. But you care what your friends think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, oh, for I sure I care about what my friends think. But they would never be like, oh, this shirt is terrible, you know? They'd be like, this is awesome. Like,
yeah. Are you guys doing anything to counter it? Are you curtailing sales of Satisfock? Are you just letting it
We're just letting it happen because, first of all, if you ever look at a person at Emo Night wearing a Satisfock shirt, they're smiling and singing and having the best time. So it's... You can't say it's promoting sadness. It's just, it's actually
that's such the opposite an interesting of thing. That. You know? Again, I don't know much about your world, but the when I see Sad as Fuck, it never occurred to me that you guys were out there promoting sadness like it was a good thing.
Right.
I thought you were putting it out there as a unifying thing. Like we all carry some type of sadness, you know,
and
we can. We find, you know, comfort in building with another, you know, to talk about that. Like, if that's something that brings us together and we can help each other cope with that or deal with it. Like, that's how, isn't even just the thought of emo night, like emo being in the word of your brand, like, oh, so you're promoting being like sad and emotional. It's like, no, like this is something that we can all build around, you know,
and find each other. Recognizing that everybody's going through something.
Yeah.
As you know, it can be something really little or something really heavy, and you can come to Emo Night, put on a Satisfock shirt, and just put that all aside, or feel through it all while you're there, you know, and kind of use it as therapy. But yeah, I don't know. It's something people love it and they keep buying it. So why discontinue it? You know,
every successful brand, artist, designer, musician has one of those.
Yeah,
at least one. I have them. Probably more now.
But you do?
Yeah. Because every time I replace it with another logo, that logo becomes the new version of that. And then I'm like, I hate that logo. And that's just also in my nature to always war against whatever anyone wants. And so...
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I'm an asshole. I'm just a contrarian. So difficult. If everyone is doing one thing, you know, if everyone's wearing a white shirt, I have to wear black. If everyone starts wearing black... I don't know. I think it just worries me, like, when everyone is doing the same thing. I think I'm worried of, not worried of, but I'm sensitive to being predictable, to expectedness. I like progression, right? Like, I want things to continually move forward. I don't like things being stagnant. I think I'm just worried about the same thing over. I'm deathly afraid of boredom. And I think that's something that is very inherent. Like a lot of us are born with that, right? The times that I'm actually most depressed and sad in my life, if I'm the most somber, is there are actually moments where I have very little momentum, you know, whether it's in my career or my family life or my friendships, but there's no momentum. I'm kind of in this in between where I know where I want to go, or I kind of have a feeling of where I need to get to, but there's just not enough momentum to get me there. And it's very frustrating. And it's this melancholy that surrounds that always like permeates this sadness, you know? So when I was a kid, I used to have this nightmare. It wasn't even a nightmare. It was before I would fall asleep. I would worry, you know, you worry about the things because it's the one time when you're still and there's no distractions. And when I was a kid, I would always worry about heaven or this idea of an afterlife, because the thought that I would live forever and be doing the same thing forever was frightening to me. Like, I liked that life was finite. I'm going to live maybe, you know, at that time it was like 65 years. Now it's maybe 75, 80 years. So good job, world. We're getting a little better at that. So I'm going to live for 75, 80 years. And I had a very clear understanding of like how my life was supposed to arc. And, you know, maybe that goes back to just how we tell stories, but everything had like a beginning and an end. But this idea of like doing the same thing forever, I'm like, God, but 800 years, like 8 million years, I'm just going to be hanging out with the same people. Like, no, this is so, so bizarre to me. And I've just always been like, I just don't like the idea of doing anything. So you can imagine how much it took for me to get married.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, you're going to commit to this forever. Like any type of commitment. I feel like not a month has gone by in the last 16 years where I'm like, I need to run away from the hundreds. You know, like, I can't, like, I'm going to do this forever. I'm always going to be the atom bomb guy. I'm always going to be the streetwear guy. Like, I don't want to be streetwear guy. I want to be book guy. Yeah. And now, like, the book's working. So I'm like, I don't want to be book guy. I want to be movie guy. Like, don't put me into this corner forever. Like, I don't know what that is. I mean, just, you know, I wrote an entire book trying to figure out what that is. But I don't know. Some of us are just wired like that. Yeah. And if I feel like I'm, again, if I'm stagnant, there's not that momentum there, then I start getting really bummed out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that for sure. But what do you do in those moments where you're feeling kind of low or kind of
sad as fuck?
What do you do to kind of get back up from that?
I really have learned to reach out to other people and ask for help. And that's very, very hard because I'm an extremely selfish, narcissistic, egoist. I just am. I'm just built to be very selfish. It's something that I've had to establish over and over again with my wife of like, I'm so selfish. Like I apologize. I'm built like this. I have to explain it to my kids. I'm like, I love you guys. Work comes first, you know, in a lot of ways. Yeah. And that's not the PC thing to say, but sometimes it's just the truth. Like, I'm just so out there for, I have so much that I need to get done, so much I want to do, you know, and I've constructed this entire life around doing whatever I want to do all the time. And it's not healthy. I'm not saying it's a good thing at all. It's actually been quite destructive. And in fact, it can work very much against you and your progress. And so the last 5 years, 6 years, I've really made an effort to ask for help, right? And I believe it started in therapy. I got into a place maybe 10 years ago where I was extremely lost. I'd really like woven this narrative around just me, and doing whatever I wanted. And I was impervious to flaw, and I was, you know, I was incapable of mistakes. I was invincible, you know, and I got into some really dark places. You know, and therapy really helped to remove me from that equation. Think more selflessly, you know, think more about my community, the people around me, and just asking for help and like helping build them. So I think that's the secret to a lot of happiness and joy is reaching out.
Yeah.
You know, and asking for help. And, you know, so that's why I wrote so much of my book about that. You know, like it's really about community. And we live in such a hyper-individualist society, right? So much of the American dream is, I'm Korean-American. I was born here, but, you know, my parents come from Asia, which is Confucian-based, and it's all about the community, it's all about the village, and it's all about the we. And it's interesting to straddle those worlds, because in America, it's all about independence, and it's about doing what you want to do, and it's DIY, and it's the American dream, like, you know, your career, and you can get in and you do whatever it takes, right? It's capitalist, and you need that too, right? Like, we need that for companies to start, and we need that for entrepreneurs to exist. But I think it's somewhere in the middle of there of do you, but also be mindful of what you are doing to your environment, your ecosystem. Like, do you, but also consider how that is affecting your loved ones and then your surrounding community. Like, always being reminded of the context of where you stand. So, it was, you know, I grew up like super westernized thinking just like, it's all about me. I got to get what I want. And then it wasn't until I was like, no, this is not just about me. It's about so many other people and those relations, like those people finding each other and getting married through my brand and those kinds of stories that I was just like, oh, that's where the magic is. Like, that's where brand longevity is.
Yeah. Right? But so. I think all these things that you're talking about come with just being an entrepreneur, you know, because you're like, you're still for 1 minute. Something doesn't happen for one day, you know? Yeah. And you're like, I'm not moving forward. Like, everything's going to fall apart. Or I think about this all the time, especially in the first like 2 or 3 years. Every move we made, we were like, we got to keep, you know, pushing and keep doing new things or it's going to get stale and it's all going to fall apart. And because of that, we were just working 24/7. And it almost became this attitude of like, none of my friends understand my problems because they don't own businesses and my parents don't understand. And I kind of got into this place of like really high school mentality of like, no one understands, you know, but it was really dark because I was doing nothing for myself and I was just miserable, you know, and it's taken a lot of like therapy and meditation and just kind of finding things outside of that to get to a place where I can do my work, but also realize there's a lot more to it. That's why I hate when, you know, when you're out and someone's like, oh, this is Babs from Emo Night. And I just want to be like, no, I'm like so many other things before then. Like there are probably a list of 20 things I would, you know, call myself before Babs from Emo Night. Because I don't want that to be
the one thing that defines who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's just a part of a huge puzzle of things that make up who I am. You know, and it's just so interesting that especially in LA, it's like, oh, this is this person from this.
This brand.
And then immediately the person's like, okay, do I need to have a conversation with this person or not? You know, based on that description of them.
Yeah.
You know?
I talk about that at length in the book.
Yeah.
About usually when people, maybe not so much anymore because I'm more front facing, but for the longest time when I would meet people and I'd sit down at a dinner and then say, oh, this is Bobby, he does the hundreds, or he's in streetwear, they would immediately go like, okay. You know, guys, especially because guys are just like, oh, all right. And I'd be like, hi. You know, I'm like, hey, how's it going? You know, I'm like a cartoon. And by the end of the meal or by the end of this trip or this time we'd spent together, they'd always come up to me. This honestly happens 9 out of 10 times. And they pull me aside. And I already know what they're going to say. They're like, hey, man, it's really nice meeting you. I thought you were going to be an asshole. You know, like you weren't a jerk. And I'm like, I get it. You know, it's streetwear. It's all the connotations that come with the line of work I'm in, the people I'm surrounded with. There's a lot of attitude and bravado.
Yeah.
And so you expect me to be a certain way because we live in a world again where, you know, we classify everyone as brands now, right? So like your brand speaks for itself. Like my brand reputation so far precedes who I am that by the time that people excavate me out of that and see me for who I am, they're like, oh wait, you're a real person, like wait, you like going to musicals, like you like the theater? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, that's just so not, that's, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, because you're a streetwear guy. And I'm like, yeah, but what does that even
literally, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Everything's so mediated, right? Well, our understandings of people and the way that they're dressed, there's all these signifiers now that we're like, okay, you're that. And it's unfortunate, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk about that in the book too, but that's why it's so important for us to evade those stereotypes and evade, like, I get into this discussion about like racism and stereotypes. And my biggest problem with it is that it abbreviates people, right? We don't get a full understanding or an appreciation of the person and their stories and their experiences. And I think that's the root of many problems in today's society is that we all are feeling unheard, unappreciated, unseen. And it's because we're constantly being categorized and classified and just written off as, oh, you are that.
Yeah.
Right. Anytime I, you know, my parents live in Huntington Beach and I was just there at a food festival and I'm just looking around. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know, like Huntington Beach, white people. I'm like, I already, you know, and I start coming up with all these presuppositions and ideas of like what that is. And even when they're wearing like Trumpy stuff or they're, you know, like they look like they're white trash or whatever it is. Anytime I get into a conversation with them, we actually find a lot of common ground, right? Like we actually find that we care about the same things. And we need to inspire and encourage people to have these conversations so we get beyond the part of, oh, I thought you were going to be an asshole. I thought you were going to be an asshole. I thought you were going to be an asshole. And then they get to like, hold on, you're not so far away. We're actually very close.
Right? Yeah.
Like the world is very close.
I think some of that is how we portray ourselves on social media, you know, because again, in the beginning, I would only post photos from Emo Night of me like DJing, quote unquote, because we don't really know how to DJ. But, you know, and so everybody's like, oh, you throw a party for a living, not knowing anything that goes into it and how much work goes into putting an event together and then putting 30 together across the U.S. every month, you know, and then running a whole other marketing company.
Yeah.
Like, and there was so much to it. And then I realized, of course, people think this about me because it's all I post about.
Yeah.
So that's why now I like post about books and meditating and going to yoga because those are the things I want to have conversations with people about. It's not being like, oh, look, I'm partying. I hate partying. Like, yeah. If I could never go out again, like, I wouldn't.
But you're so good at it.
Yeah. But it's like a thing. No, you know what I mean? And I am having fun at emo night, but it just looks like I'm always having fun. And so I slowly started to, you know, sprinkle in when I was having bad days and talking about that and talking about mental wellness and what I do to stay sane with all the things going on and just show other parts of my personality and have these conversations on social media that aren't just kind of like, oh, you look so cute, like cute selfie, cute outfit, and more like, oh, that's such a good book, like you should read this one, you know, or like that yoga place is cool, you should try this one because it's similar.
Yeah.
And that's when I've kind of relearned my relationship with Instagram in general, you know. And I'm finding more like, oh, I can have meaningful conversations on here. It's not just about selfies and promoting our brand, you know.
We're talking about nuance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I can go out. I can talk about this stuff forever, but
yeah,
I think we just have access to so just too much information, too many people that we almost have to. We're sitting kind of in your stock room, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot of shirts. You have a lot of inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to start putting them into these different cubbies in order to make sense of it. Mm-hmm. Because it's so much, right? Like, if you just had a pile of shirts on the floor, I'd be like, oh, God, it looks messy. But, like, let me put it here. So, okay, this one I know sells the best. This one sells worst. Let's color coordinate it so I know where to find it. And it's not even a human problem. I believe it's a problem that we're starting to face because we're in this flux with how technology works and the internet and social media and the algorithms. And we have, you know, I follow like thousands of people on Instagram. That's impossible to do. You can't follow thousands of people in life and keep up with all their updates. So you just by nature, I think by our biology, we have to start putting people into cubbies, be like, okay, Babs is the emo party girl, you know?
yeah.
Like Ben. Yeah. Ben's the streetwear guy. Okay. So, because it just makes it easier for us and alleviates this trying to understand where, you know, back in the day, or like, let's just say, even say like pre-social media, pre-internet, our communities were quite small, right? They were our high school. Like, you married someone that you knew in high school, right? Like, that was the majority. That was almost every story in America. You had access to 5 options for who you could date, you know, and like you had 5 friends, and that's your group didn't get much greater than that. That was very easy to manage and organize, and you can definitely see the nuance in each person, what they cared about, and you didn't look at people as like, that's a Trump person, that's like a non-Trumper. Like, you didn't do that to people because you had time to get to know them. We just don't have time, right? Like, there's just not enough energy and time. There's no way to classify. So we have to almost be like, dude, you're this. I have 5.5% of my day allocated to thinking about you right now before I have to move on. And it's unfortunate. It's just the weight of the information. It's the weight of this digital age on us that I don't think that we're necessarily equipped to deal with. We're not computers.
You know? Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm definitely having a really hard time dealing with it, but
yeah. I think that's everyone.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's kind of a rethinking of it all, I think, across the board.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's kind of like, why am I on Instagram so much? And it's kind of saying, oh, I don't have time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then you scroll through Instagram for an hour.
For like 4 hours.
So it's like, you have that hour. You can just log out or give yourself a 15 minute a day limit. And
yeah.
You know, but it's hard because it's so easy to just flip through it. And
yeah.
Spiral into a hole.
You can't blame yourself for it. We really are not equipped as human beings to keep up with technology at the rate it's at now. It was never meant to be like this, right? And, you know, my idea of the future is this one where AI automation robots have completely taken over all the work and all the menial duties and stuffing boxes and taking over those jobs, which is already happening, right? Like, that's already very much happening. And that's going to be problematic for maybe a generation, or maybe at least the next 20, 30 years as people rethink what work is. But if you think about what we do every day as people, what brings us joy, right? Like, this is going to be the best part of my day because I'm having just a really thorough, deep conversation with a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. The second best part of my day is I'm going to go to work and I'm going to start drawing and I'm going to design something, I'm going to make something, right? Like, this is what we are meant to do. We are meant to create. We're meant to bond in love. We're meant to also make a lot of mistakes, right? Like, we're meant to have errors and learn from those errors, and we're meant to be sad. And when we're sad, we have other people lift us up, right? Like, we rely on each other. Like, that's what humans do best. What we don't do best is work, right? Like, we are not really the best workers. We require a lot of rest. We get sick. We need vacations. We get bored. We get distracted. We need to eat, you know, like, so we need coffee to just keep up with the pace of it all, right?
Live.
Let robots do that. Like, you know, I think robots are very good at that. They never need to sleep. They're faster, quicker. And eventually we're going to realize, let the robots just take over most of that work and let us be over here and doing what we're really meant to do, which is, as human beings, enjoy life and discover and create and think as humans do. And it's just two separate things. But right now, I feel like it's a really difficult part of human history where we are trying to keep up with the robots and we're never going to win the war, right? Like, not just in terms of work and productivity, but just algorithms. Algorithms are running circles around us where we can't keep up, and they're making us buy things that we're not supposed to be buying, right? We're constantly hooked on our phones, and that's robots winning over on us because the way that they're, you know, they want the internet never ends. And so our jobs feel like they never end, right? Like, we feel like we never end. Like, there's so much. We're never going to finish reading this book. It's, again, it's infinite. There's no finiteness to it.
Yeah.
And so that's exhausting. Like, we're not meant to do that. We're not meant to try to keep up with the pace of what this is, this endless scroll. Like, life is not an endless scroll, right? Life is, you know, we have windows of life and we have periods and seasons of life where we learn things, and relationships build and they end, and like, things have a finiteness to them. So I think once we start figuring that out, we can get to a more measured, balanced place. But until then, just I tell myself and I tell people, like, don't blame yourself for how much work, the internet, the world is exhausting you, the news cycle, everything. Don't blame yourself for it. It's like, it's not your fault. Like, if you lose a war against a rhino, you know, or like an elephant's trampling you, like, you're going to blame yourself for that? Like, you never had a chance.
Right.
You know, just, you're not supposed to be in the same area as the rhino. You're supposed to go stand on the other side of the fence. The rhino has its little place and you're over there.
Yeah.
You're going to be much happier over there.
Yeah.
So
I never really thought about it like that.
I think about this stuff way too much.
No, I mean, I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Too, but just not in that way of, because I do blame myself. I'm like, holy shit, I just spent an hour and a half on Instagram. And I just get in the worst mood because I hate myself for doing that. Yeah. But I never really thought about it, that it's not really a war to win. You know?
It's not something that, there shouldn't be any guilt or blame associated with that. And also, if we didn't have internet or social media, if we didn't have these, you may have been doing that just cutting coupons 20 years ago, right? Or you might have been like knitting.
Sign me up.
Right? Okay.
Love knitting.
Yeah. But then everyone at that time would have been making fun of you, or like, you would have felt bad, like, geez, should I be more social?
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is a discussion that parents have a lot because our kids spend a lot of time on video games and YouTube videos. But when you think about my generation, like, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s and I was a bookworm. And to be a bookworm was antisocial, and it was actually quite frowned upon, right? Like, you're spending so much time reading and you're not going, go outside and play. My dad would go outside and play, go outside and hang out with your friends, like, get out there. And now I'm like telling my kids, go inside and read more. Like, why are you guys always running around with your Pokemon Go? Like, go inside and read. I'm like, well, what am I doing? It's always going to be something, you know? So, it's, you know, don't blame yourself. I understand that it feels gross sometimes when you spend that much time on the internet, but you're also probably just zoning out because you're exhausted.
Exactly. It's a good way to tune out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We can wrap this up. I know you're a busy guy, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the food fest you guys have coming up.
Yeah.
And also, we're so excited to be a part of it.
Thank you so much.
But where did the idea come from? How did it all come together? And what can people expect when they go?
Yeah. Okay. So Saturday the 15th is the Family Style Food Festival. It's our first food festival. It was very ill-timed because I'm working on promoting like 7 things at once.
Nice.
I'm working on like 11 things at once. And then this was more or less, this was really Ben's idea. Now, Ben is my partner, and we've also partnered up with our friend Miles, who's who comes from the food festival space. But, you know, Ben's favorite thing in the world is feeding people. If you ever have the opportunity to sit across from him at dinner, he will literally feed you like you're a baby. And he, you know, I think it's cultural for him. He's just a Persian kid who grew up in LA, but he loves big food, big dinners, and he likes bringing people together and feeding. So this food thing has always been in the nature of the brand. We've been doing these things called Eat Meats for many years, where we take over restaurants and bring people together. And really what, you know, again, to bring it back to my book, the message is about community and bringing people together and how that's the most important piece of a brand. And nothing brings people together like food, right? Like food historically, since the dawn of time, has been used to bring different kinds of groups people together, right? Like if you're dating, if you're finding, you know, if you're looking for romance, if you're working on a business relationship, if you're even warring nations have come together over food. So food, we're like, what is the best way? What's like the most essential, you know, critical, the most base way to bring people together? It's food. So why don't we just throw like the best food festival? Now, there's a lot of food festivals out there, and I've been to a few of them, and they're pretty boring, you know, and they're pretty stuffy, and they're pretty like 30, like older 30s crowd that has money and like a couple of new kids, and they're like, what do? I guess I'll go to the food festival. So it's that. And we didn't want that because that's really not the world that inspires us. And so we're doing kind of a streetwear interpretation of what a food festival is. So every vendor, every participant, chef, restaurant is collaborating with a streetwear designer, a brand, an artist, or even a furniture maker on product and merchandise. So half of the festival is really dedicated towards showcasing these one-off collaborations, right? Like we have, like in terms of furniture, we have Uncle Paulie's, who makes some of the best sandwiches in LA. Paulie's working with Modernica on making a cutting board, yeah, right? So like Chef Ludo, who's a very famous chef from out here, he has Petit Trois, and Petit Trois is collaborating with Chinatown Market, and they're making all kinds of merchandise. They're not just making clothes, they're making like plates and cutlery and stuff like that.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's very unique, right? Like no one has really thought of it, but there's always been these weird intersections and parallels between the food space and streetwear. Chefs all want to be into streetwear. It's kind of like how like basketball players and rappers are. Like every basketball player wants to rap, and then every rapper like wants to play ball. In our world, it's like streetwear guys and chefs, for whatever reason, have, yeah, this amazing weird synergy and kind of the same lifestyle habits. And so like, why don't we just bring that together? Like, we're all friends. Why don't we make merchandise? And all these chefs are stoked because they're like, cool, I'm gonna make my own streetwear now. I don't have to wear Supreme. Like, I'm gonna wear my own t-shirt or hat or whatever it is. And then our guys, like all the streetwear guys, are like, well, we get to participate in the food space, which is completely novel and different for us. And so it's just, it's really cool to see. We love collaborations, right? We love seeing how, you know, I was just saying, we love collaborations because collaborations to me are the root of all ideas and creativity. It's bringing two people together to create something out of nothing. And so it's typically always like brands working with other brands. It's kind of expected. And this is independent universes colliding for the first time. And we're seeing some really cool stuff starting to happen. So we have bigger announcements coming. But yeah, September 15th, please come. It's in LA for now. You know, the goal is that we traveled around and we can be like emo night one day. Oh, and there's music. We don't want it. We didn't want it to be a music festival, so we don't have performances. So we just wanted like the best DJs, and we have like One for Three, and we have, you know, a lot of our friends from around the world that we think have the best DJs. And I was like, we have to have emo night.
Yeah, we're the best DJs.
So. Yeah, I was like, this is front and center. We need emo night.
Like
there.
Very good at.
Yeah, DJ. You're like, that's all you do, right? You're a DJ.
Yeah, I just party and I'm a DJ. Yeah,
you don't read books or anything.
I don't do anything.
You're
else.
A party
so this
girl.
Is perfect.
Perfect for
me.
You.
Yeah.
It's like, who would be the best party girl? Babs. That's what she does.
That sounds really fun, and we're honestly so excited to be there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's gonna be fun.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob.
That's what ransomware is all about. It's psychological pressure.
Ransomware, when your computer's hacked into and your data held ransom. Attacks are on the rise, and Russian gangs are making billions of dollars.
The moment I got that message, I knew our greatest fears that we ever have are starting to come true.
The post-Cold War era is over.
.com, the hacking. A new season from Crowd Network with me, Katie Puckrick. Just search for .com, that's DOTCOM, and subscribe.